I saw bhakti yoga. And I followed yoga. I was already pretty frustrated by then. I was, 16, and I was thinking, what the hell is this all about? Maybe I should just commit suicide or something, just get it over with, because I'm going to die anyway, so might as well just, go for it and get it over with. If that's what life is about, we just live it off and we die and who cares? So let's just get it over with. And anyway, so I walked in, and again, there's the same people, the Hare Krishnas. And I started talking to them, and I didn't really agree with everything. They went into drugs and all this thing, and anyway. But I bought some beads, and I bought the Krishna books and all, and I went home, and they showed me how to chant, and I chanted one round, and that's it. I became convinced that I would become a devotee. And then I started telling my friends, I'm going to become a devotee. I thought this guy took a few too many, And I used to look in the mirror, what am I going to look like with a bald head? I was 17, and then I just moved in the temple one day, So the point is that I'm sure we could all tell our stories, but this is the beauty of Krishna consciousness, that it impacts everyone. It doesn't matter, and it may temporarily seem that they'll be they're favorable or inimical or whatever, but as Prabhupada said, that our whole business is to please the Paramatma within the heart of those individuals. And Krishna is in their heart, and he's been following the living entities throughout their existence. And sometimes, happy because they're related, because what they perceive something favorable is happening to them. They've got their job, they got this. And then they go to a depressed moment because they lost their job, or they lost their girlfriend, or whatever. And because they've somehow been exposed to Krishna, then Krishna within their heart will direct them to the proper place by which they should go. So here we see that Putana, of course, she's compared to a big serpent. And at first she disguised herself as a very beautiful woman, and then she became this, when Krishna killed her, then she became this huge serpent. And it's interesting that in the Bhagavad Gita we hear that Krishna says how being freed from attachment, fear, and anger. So we often preach that this is the benefit of Krishna consciousness, as you become free of fear. One time they asked Prabhupada about that Swamiji, what miracle can you make? And he's or produce, because Sai Baba was doing producing gold with ashes and all that. But it said fearlessness. And you think about it, this is quite a miracle, because in the mature world, everyone is fearful. So here we read how Vasudeva, Nanda Maharaj, they were in a fearful situation. Although we, in the Bhagavad Gita, read that you should not be fearful. And being the fact that we're not the body, this material world, sometimes we describe it as Kunta, full of anxiety, full of fear, spiritual world being Vaikunta, with no fear, no anxiety. So how is it that here they seem to perceive fear? So scholars and speculators and all that would read this and find it kind of intriguing or confusing for them, that these are people that is Goloka, supposed to be free of fear and so forth, but they're experiencing fear and anxiety, so why should I go there? Why should I take part? It seems that the same symptoms are there, anxiety, fear, and when they saw Krishna on top of Putana, Mother Yashoda grabbed Krishna and she chanted mantras and all the different things to protect Krishna and so forth, and then they chopped up Putana, compared to a snake, chopped her up and burnt all the pieces in case they would, Jarasandha, come back together. We know the story of Jarasandha, how Bhima threw one part and then kept coming back together, and Krishna said, okay, throw it the opposite direction and then he won't come back together. So there was some idea like that, that Putana somehow would come back together. So they burnt all the body parts. But this pastime of them being fearful and anxiety should not be misunderstood, that it's the same fear and anxiety that we experience in the mature world. Actually, in the mature world, we enjoy fearful situation. That's why people pay to go to see horror movies. They like that sensation of being freaked out by some movie, someone's chopping people up and all that. So in that sense, we enjoy horror. And in the spiritual world, that's also there. Fear, horror, different things are there, the same emotion. But there it brings ecstasy. It brings pleasure. Because there's really no fear, no anxiety. And it enhances their pastimes with Krishna. But here in the material world, there's actually the notion of death, because we're attached to this body, and ultimately this body will not be with us for very long. And the snake is always something that is feared. It's not some animal that people like or enjoy or cuddle, but it's something that everyone, even in the Bible, we have the story of Adam and Eve and the serpent that comes, and you know, they're living in this paradise, and you know, the serpent's the one who tells them eat the apple. And so even in the Bible, the serpent's not, you know, well perceived. And Prabhupada describes a story once. He was with, well, past time he was with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. They were here in class. Bhaktisiddhanta was preaching, and there was a snake. So immediately Bhaktisiddhanta ordered it to be killed. And Prabhupada said, it remained puzzling for me why Bhaktisiddhanta had ordered it to be killed. Because Vijayavinaya Sampani, Brahminikani, you know, the beautiful, you know, Brahmins they see are all living entities. So why? But he said it remained puzzling. But later I read in the scriptures that even the sadhu, when a snake is killed, is very happy. So he said I was satisfied. So in this way we see that the serpent is not very well appreciated. And we see the story of Agasura, how the cowherd boys, in a different situation, they could perceive that this was a big snake. At first they were wondering, what is this? And you know, then they could ascertain it's some big snake, and they were looking at Krishna and thinking, well, what would happen if we just walked in here, you know? And they were just thinking, well, how is Krishna going to react? What's he going to do? Because they're always amazed to see how Krishna's killing this one demon, or once he swallowed the whole forest fire, you know, so lifted Govardhan here, he does all sorts of amazing things. So they were just, okay, let's go in, let's try this and see how Krishna's going to react. And Krishna momentarily is bewildered, you know, saying, what's going on here, you know? They're walking into this big snake. So in that situation, the cowherd boys didn't express any fear, you know. They just walked right in. So we have this story of that, of Agasura. And sometimes we compare the snake to the story of the python that just stays there, you know, with mouth open, waiting for some food, something to crawl in. Sometimes a mouse may think, oh, this is a nice cave, let me go hide inside, or like that, and the python just... So sometimes the snake is compared like that, the sadhu is compared to that snake, but he's just not wanting anything, you know, patiently waiting, whatever comes of its own accord, but he's not interested to make endeavors, like we see in the Western world, everyone's trying to improve economic development, you know, working hard and I'm going to make it happen. But Prabhupada said this is all foolishness. You cannot change your karma, you know. Whatever you're destined, you're destined. Just like misery comes, no one endeavors for misery, but misery comes. So people think, oh, I'll endeavor for happiness and happiness will come, but it's not under your control, you know. The misery will come, happiness will come, and so the devotee is like that. He's compared to that python. He's just happy, you know. He's just doing his thing, and whatever happens, it's Krishna's arrangement. Of course, it doesn't mean we should be neglectful, and by our neglect, Krishna becomes our servant. I'll just cross the street, and whatever happens, happens. No, but the notion that I'm not the controller, and this is the disease, the material disease, ultimately, is that we're all thinking we're the controller. Because we're seeing Krishna and thinking, okay, he's the supreme controller and he's the supreme enjoyer. So if I became the supreme controller, I would automatically become the supreme enjoyer. And we see in the material world, this is all what's going on. Everyone is trying to be the supreme controller. And when they can't control anything, they buy a pet. Sometimes you see these these people, they have a pet dog, okay, sit. And the dog's just like, you know, sit. Sit. Okay. And this guy's, you know, thinking he's going to control this living entity, but, you know, of course they have some techniques, but living entities are all independent. We all have our own desires to enjoy. And this is the nature of the material world. We're all trying to control something, control someone. And this is where sex life originates. You know, that I'm an illusion thinking I'm this body and I'm the enjoyer, but now I've illusioned someone to think that if she's with me or if he's with me, he's going to also enjoy. So it's the supreme, like, ego trip, you know, that we have, that not only I'm conquering matter, but now I've conquered a living entity. So it's the highest thrill that we have in the mature world, to be the enjoyer and the conqueror, and it manifests in sex life. So we have to become freed of that desire to be the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer. And therefore that example of the python is very passive and just waiting whatever come of its own accord. And this is the stage of a sadhu, that he's atmaram, he's self-satisfied, he's not hankering or lamenting, you know, brahma bhuta prasanna atmana sojaka kanchati. He's not hankering or lamenting about everything, because he knows everything in this material is just an illusion, it's temporary, it will not ultimately satisfy me. But this is not an artificial thing that we can just mentally come to. You know, we have to get a higher taste. We have to experience something better. We have to replace. You know, like Prabhupada used to give an example, the glass, if it's half full, you can put anything in it. But if it's full, then anything that comes in will overflow. So we have to fill ourselves with Krishna consciousness. But to do that, we have to become convinced. And that's the difficulty.
Because
there's no, you know, secrets. Prabhupada did not come here and give us some particularly secretive thing, and this is meant for one person, and this is meant for... He gave the formula to everybody. Same formula that Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, all the Goswamis followed. Same Hare Krishna mantra, and so forth. But are we chanting the mantra in Namaparad, Namabas, Sudanam? That's a different, you know, sometimes devotees say, oh, Prabhu, I've been chanting 16 rounds for so many years, I'm not getting anything out of it. Yeah, but what stage have you been chanting? If you take Javex, you have that in America, I guess, Javex, or bleach, you know. So if you take bleach and you put one drop of it in the bucket of water, yeah, put some bleach in there, nothing's being clean. Well, yeah, you've diluted it so much, but what do you expect? You see? So, Namaparada is like that. It's a twilight reflection of the holy name. So if you're chanting on that level, yeah, you'll get something out of it. But don't expect to get the result of Sudanam. So the Goswamis, they were chanting on that level. But what makes the difference is that we're not convinced. If I'm not convinced, I won't invest myself in it. I won't do it because I'm not really convinced. It's like a child. You give a child $1,000, it's a piece of paper for him. He'll start, you know, if he has coloring pencils, he'll start coloring on it and doing things. And if you give him another piece of paper that's more colorful, he'll just trade it because, you know, doesn't know what the value of the, you know, $1,000 is. So, but we know. If they just give us $1,000 and immediately put it in our pocket, we won't want to lose it. We won't, you know. So that's the thing. It's a question of degree of conviction. Are we convinced that Krishna consciousness is everything? And if we're not, then we'll allow ourselves to be distracted. And this one disciple came to the guru and he asked him, how is it that I can live in this world with no distraction? I see so many things, you know, so much distraction. He said, okay, well, before I can answer this, I want you to perform one task for me. I want you to take this pot, fill it with water, put it on your head, and walk around the village, and then come back. And don't drop one, you know, don't let one drop of water fall. And when you come back and you've accomplished this task, then I will answer your question. So the disciple did that, filled the pot, walked around, and so forth, came back. And the guru said, okay, so I have one question. What did you see? Oh, Guru Maharaj, I didn't see anything. What do you mean you didn't see anything? Your eyes were closed? No, I was walking. I didn't want to trip over anything, so my eyes were open. So you didn't see anything. You walked the whole village, you didn't see anything. No, because I was so much concentrating, I'm not dropping, because you told me don't let one drop of water fall, that I was so much focusing on that, I didn't pay attention to anything. He said, well, that is your answer. It's you're so focused, then you won't pay attention to these things. But if you're not focused, then the billboard comes by, and oh, what is this, and what is that, and you get distracted because you're not focused. And therefore, what you have, you're ready to let go for something else. Right? Because a consciousness can only focus on... It's like if you're feeling pain in your leg, then you can smash your hand, and then you won't feel that pain. You'll feel the pain in your hand. You can't focus on too many things at once and be efficient. So if we focus on Krishna consciousness, then gradually, and we see that is described in the Bhagavad Gita, how this whole material world gets reduced to the footprint of a calf, and the living entity steps over it. Well, how does that take place? You know, the material world gets reduced. It doesn't get reduced, but it's our consciousness that reduces it. We give importance to this world, but there's no importance. It's an illusion. But because I give importance, I value this, I value that. You know, I often give the example, if you go to the flea market, one guy's getting rid of his junk and the other one buying it, thinking, wow, I got a really good deal. Right? For him, it's a good deal. The other guy's like, oh my God, I sold that piece of, you know, I've been wanting to get rid of this stuff forever. So it's all very relative. It just depends on our perception of things. So we create this material world, and we make it very important, but it actually is very insignificant. Another example is that just like the sun is very big, but if you take your thumb and you bring it right close to your eye, you make everything disappear. It's just a perception. The thumb is very close to your eye, and the sun is very far. So if we bring Krishna consciousness close to our consciousness, then the material world will become insignificant. And if we put Krishna consciousness aside, then this material world will encompass our whole existence. And we see that with the materialists. They're busy and they're doing things and they're partying. And you look at that and you think, gee, how can they do all that stupid thing? All that crazy stuff. How they can, day after day after day, you know, it's like that's their whole existence. They're practically like a different species. They have two arms, two legs, but they're, and you talk to them and it's like, I was once in a while go and see my brother, and you know, biologically we got the same genes and all that, but I can't relate to them. You know, it's a different species, like a different. There's nothing in common. So it's like that. Well, I can go on. So Krishna consciousness is all auspicious, and now it depends. Like Prabhupada used to say, we are the architect of our own destiny. So we have to plan our Krishna consciousness. We have to make arrangements and analyze, okay, where am I at, where do I want to be, and how am I going to go there? And we have to work into the program. And it's not a question in my sannyasi, brahmacharya, grihasa. Whatever your vehicle will work, whatever you need, take it and use it for Krishna. And in that way, but the ultimate goal, not to do Swarta Kitani Vishnu, the ultimate goal is to become Krishna conscious. Somehow, at the time of death, I will try to create an environment, a situation, by which I will be Krishna conscious. And that is depending on every one of us. We have to fly our own planes. And we can get the association with devotees, and even that association, we can take it to different degrees. It can be a nice social club. I come on Sunday, you know, nice prasadam, see nice deities. It's great, you know, I'm a little bored. I'll come to the temple, you know, get a little social life into my existence. And that can just be that. You know, talk to a few devotees, see what's happening, go home. You know. And it could be something much more deeper. That I'm reading the scriptures, I'm studying, you know, I have questions, I have inquiry, I sit down, I talk about Krishna, I want to know more, and so forth and so on. And one of the ways, at least for myself, what I've personally realized, if I can share that, is that the element of gratitude. When you have the element of gratitude, there's the feeling of indebtedness, you know, automatically. If I feel gratitude, I feel indebted automatically. And in that indebtedness, when I feel indebted towards someone, then I automatically want to render service to that person. I want to pay my sense of indebtedness. But if there's no gratitude, if I take it, like Prabhupada said, the firm gratitude breeds content, then it's like that other mentality is that I deserve this, you know, and it's not good enough. We see that in children who take, you know, who are a little spoiled, they take everything they get, and they think, oh, you know, I deserve better. I want more than this. So this is mood of arrogance, but the mood of humility is that I feel so grateful for this gift that I've received. I want to cherish it, and I want to repay the debt that I feel. You know, I've received such a wonderful gift that I feel indebted towards this person who gave it to me. Therefore, I want to do something to pay off that. It's just like someone saves your life. You're drowning. The person saves your life. Then you feel gratitude. You're all thinking, boy, how can I pay this person? The guy saved my life. This person saved my life. So you automatically, it's a natural emotion that you're always looking at an opportunity to pay back this. So if we have that sense all the time, keeping that in focus, then Krishna consciousness will be much easier to perform than if we take it for granted, and if we don't have that sense of gratitude, then we can easily slip and lose the indebtedness that I have to perform something. I have to demonstrate how I'm pleased, I'm happy to have received this, you know, like that. So there's some, I was just thinking also some different stories also that we have about snakes, because it talks a little bit about snakes, how Narada Muni had made one snake a Vaishnav, but then the snake was having problems because everyone knew that the snake being a Vaishnav would not bite anyone. So the kids would throw rocks at it and so forth. So then the poor snake came back to Narada and said, what can I do? You know, he said, well, don't bite, but show your hood. When they come around, just show your hood, and then you'll scare them, you know. So there's one story like that about snakes. It's not, you know, it's just something I was thinking about snakes, because this relates to snakes and so forth. So I was thinking of this one particular situation. There's also the story of Haridas Thakur being the snake in the cave. And when he was not disturbed, but the people who came to the cave to have darshan would be disturbed and so forth. So finally, Haridas Thakur decided, okay, these people are disturbed, let me go somewhere else. And then the snake automatically left the cave, like that. So there's different little pastimes that we have sometimes about snakes in the scriptures and like that. So I'll stop here. I don't know if you have at least time for questions. Yes, Prabhu?
Talks about the python that lays down in the road. Prabhupada, he gives a very interesting purport on that verse. And he says that one...
Oh, it's not working? The mic's not working.
That one should not spend any time in the maintenance of his body. He should spend no time in the maintenance of his body. And then he says, one should use 100% of his time to spread Krishna consciousness. Of course, when I first joined, that was actually possible. It was a reality. We all did that. And then nowadays, it's like, whoa, you know, I can't imagine that verse. You know. But I mentioned that.
Well, there's been a social switch in our movement. When we all joined, the mission was more important than the individual. Now the individual has become more important than the mission, you know. And there are different social reasons for that. Like Krishna says, you surrender unto me and I will protect you. So there's no surrender if there's no protection. Just like the husband, the wife is supposed to surrender to her husband, but he's supposed to be the protector. If he doesn't protect the wife, how can she surrender? So if we don't feel protected within ISKCON, then we'll go and take shelter somewhere else. So in those days, we all felt that Prabhupada was giving us 100% shelter. That if we had any problems, Prabhupada would fly 10,000 miles to come and deal with the problem. And if the devotees don't feel that, then it'll be very difficult for them to surrender. You can't expect one without the other. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
After Maharaj Parikshit was bitten by that snake, I think his son, Janami Jai, performed a great sacrifice to kill all the snakes in the world. But then he was stopped. I mean, whilst the sacrifice was going, he was stopped by either Kashyapa or somebody, that these are living entities also. It doesn't make sense killing them. I mean, they have a purpose in life, you know. And why are you going to kill all these snakes? And then I think he stopped. So, yes, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that, you know, the serpent is envious. But I don't think that, you know, we should, you know, kill them mercilessly, you know. I mean,
It doesn't mean that we just, that becomes our purpose. We go all over the place trying to kill every snake on the planet. That's not what was referred. There's also Dhruva Maharaj, that when his brother was killed, he started killing all of, you know, Rakshasa and all that, and then he was also stopped, you know. So, but the point is still that if there's a snake around, you don't want to fool around, you know. You're not going to start feeding it prasadam and stuff and encouraging it to come around.
Hare Krishna. Just in regards to what you said about shelter and in regards to the comment that was made, that we all thought that Prabhupada would give a shelter, whatever problem. That's certainly true, that when we feel sheltered, we're willing to surrender. But also, I think it has something to do with our desire for independence, that in the beginning, we gave up our independence and we just surrendered. And I'm not sure which came first, the chicken or the egg, but we did surrender, and then gradually, and not even before Prabhupada was not with us anymore, when Prabhupada was still there and still very much giving us shelter, there still crept in some desire for independence. And then ISKCON couldn't support that independence. We wanted, you know, a pair of flip-flops and a plastic watch wasn't good enough. We wanted Birkenstock shoes and a Seiko watch, so whatever. But we wanted, I had families and children, and we wanted more than a room. When I was a devotee, I always lived in the temple. I never had an apartment. And two of my children were born in the temple. So, but most people aren't really willing to do that anymore. So the shelter comes in proportion to the surrender, and it's a two-way street, I think, not just a one-way street, you know what I mean? That we want what we want, we kind of get a reciprocation according to what we want, and then sometimes even though the shelter is there, we're just not advanced enough to take it, I think. Is that...
Yeah, but I think that's what Papa was drilling us constantly about preaching and about spreading Krishna consciousness, and he convinced us that we would get more pleasure by spreading Krishna consciousness and sacrificing our personal independence and, you know, styles and whatever. And we did experience that. But that has to be constantly pushed. It's like, you know, everyone knows Kellogg's Cornflake, but they're, you know, after 40 years, they're still advertising. And it is, I'm not saying no one's talking about preaching, but Prabhupada really pushed it a lot, and it became a focus, you know. And of course, there is that element of independence and material desires and familiarity and all these other things. So we can't blame, you know, like the movement. I'm not trying to blame the movement, but there is that element that, you know, it has to be there, that people have to really feel that there's some shelter, and those who want a higher, you know, opulent existence, if they have to constantly be preached and reminded that you won't become satisfied with that, you know.
And,
think what you made the point of, the mission in comparison to the individual and the individual in comparison to the mission, is a very interesting point, because early years in this Krishna conscious movement, the mission was number one thing. And that's what the pleasure was derived from, especially when we were young, quite young, and you know, you have a mission in life. You got Prabhupada in there, he's the leader, so it was very enthusing. However, that doesn't necessarily went away when Prabhupada left. So the idea now is, I think, is to re-emphasize the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and that's why a lot of newcomers into ISKCON, they can't hang on to it, and so they think that ISKCON is just another math, another yoga center. But if we emphasize the mission, that's where the taste is. We have a lot of individuals born in the movement, and we see them, you know, drifting away because they the deities are there. You know, I'm born seeing the deities here, or I'm being born seeing this devotee's chanting. So there's now that, like we were talking about last night, there's not that element of self-understanding, of that commitment to something higher. So that hasn't gone away. What happened is we've grown older. The mission is still there. And I think as long as we participate in the mission, that pleasure can still be derived from the participation in Krishna consciousness. That's very important, actually. So the mission didn't go away and the individual didn't become more important. It's just we have to balance. You know, some of us have married again. We have marriage problems because we cannot balance all things. So we can relieve that pleasure in Krishna consciousness that we experienced when we were young, even when we were old, like you were saying, doesn't matter the situation. Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Sannyasi. Is the element of the source of pleasure is there. Krishna is there. The mission of Prabhupada is still there. Nothing gone away.
I think it's a very interesting conversation, and I appreciate what you said about a sort of shift in priorities from the mission to the individual. And it is a good way of looking at it. And I think, as Yuval Kishore was saying, that you know, somehow we need to restore that balance, you know, that we may have swung too far now, where everyone is looking very individualistically and, you know, what's my best situation, Krishna consciousness, rather than, as you said in the beginning, we were very, very focused on Srila Prabhupada's mission, serving Srila Prabhupada, preaching Krishna consciousness, you know, in our youthful energy and innocence and exuberance, you know, but we can also go the other way where it is too overly focused on, you know, what's in it for me, rather than what do I need to do to serve Srila Prabhupada in this mission. So I think that it does require balance. Devotees do need to feel protected. They do need to feel, you know, that they have value and worth. And sometimes that wasn't there so much in the early days. And sometimes devotees did feel like a lacking in that. So now we need to restore that. And I think our movement is starting to see that. There's so much more emphasis now on devotee care and things like that. And at the same time, we also want to really revive the preaching spirit and the missionary spirit that we once had. And it does become, you know, a little bit more difficult as people are very absorbed in their family life, and they do need to take care of that. So they, you know, they may not be able to be right on the front lines as much, but still the spirit can be there and people can assist where they can. And I would also like to say that many of us are now at the end of our of that stage of our life, when it's a good opportunity for those of us who are a little older and our family responsibilities are less, to kind of get back into that missionary spirit as we did when we were young. So I think that there's a good opportunity for both to be there. Just like in our strategic planning that the GBC is doing, the sort of the simple motto or the simple mission statement was more devotees and happier devotees, which means we need both. Mm-hmm. We need the care of the devotees, and we also need to continue the missionary spirit of preaching and making more devotees. So anyway, thank you very much for your class and these really interesting points that you brought out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.